folks. Just a quick heads up that this episode contains spoilers for My Love from the Star. If you haven't seen it yet, go watch and then come back and listen. Everyone else, hope you enjoy the episode. Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Daebak Podcast, where we do a deep dive into the classic Korean dramas that have won over generations of fans across decades and around the world. Today, we're discussing My Love from the Star, the 2013 drama that was a massive Hallyu hit that won over millions of fans across China and Asia. I'm one of your hosts, Alisa, also known as the Bollywood Newbie on Twitter, and I'm joined by Melanie of Pardesi Reviews on YouTube.
Hello.
Vicky of That Vicky Girl, also on YouTube.
Hi.
And Catherine of TotallyFilmy.com.
Hello.
We also have a special guest who's known as Drama Mara on Twitter and YouTube. And Mara creates hilarious and insightful video analyses of K-dramas, so you should definitely check out her channel. I'm going to drop a link in the show notes. And she lives in South Korea, and it is 6 o'clock in the morning there. So we really appreciate her joining us today. Welcome,
thank you
Mara.
So much for having me. Thank you. Thank you.
I'm so excited you're with us.
Yes.
Oh, I'm so excited to be here.
We fell in love with your videos, and we felt like you were part of our tribe of people in terms of like how we like to approach talking about dramas. So we're very excited to have you here.
And I have felt the same way about your podcast. So it's nice to be here.
Thank you.
Before
we dive into the episode, I just want to take a moment to acknowledge the current COVID surge that's happening worldwide. We know that the coronavirus pandemic continues to have devastating effects all over the world, with some of the worst outbreaks in the same places where we have the most listeners. And we want to acknowledge the difficulty and heartbreak that so many of you are experiencing and tell you that our hearts are with you. We wish we could do more to help, but we hope that we can at least distract you for a few minutes or a few hours. Take care of each other out there. So now I'd like to segue into talking about our last episode, which was on Crash Landing on You and our listener feedback. And we got a great response to that episode, and it was gratifying because I was a little worried about how it would be received, given the passion that many people have for this drama. And we were pretty critical of the show and the podcast, especially me and Vicky, kind of went off on it a little bit. Turns out a lot of folks agreed with our assessment, and I just want to take a moment to read some of the responses we got. So Manal of the Crash Landed on You podcast wrote, enjoyed this episode, found myself agreeing with Catherine and Alisa. Like many, Crash Landing on You was my first K-drama, but as I started watching more dramas, it started dropping in ranks of my favorite dramas. I will, however, always have it on my must-watch list, as it is the perfect mix and introduction into K-drama world for newbies. It gets the formula right. Great lead pair, terrific supporting cast and arcs, and a lovely soundtrack. So I agree with her on that. It fell on my ranks too, right? Yeah.
Well, I totally agree that it still is one that I recommend to people because it is such a good mix and it is a good one to be an introduction to newbies.
Yeah, I agree. Another listener, RK, wrote, I don't love Crash Landing on You the way so many others do. It feels like old wine in a new bottle. Granted, the newest, shiniest, most attractively designed and marketed bottle, but still. But Chloe is a global phenomenon, and for that reason, I think, classic or not, it will still be talked about decades from now and for many perfectly good reasons. And I see Melanie is shaking her head vigorously, and I also agree with her on this, and it's going to continue to be listened, watched and talked about. So White Heart on Twitter wrote, listen to the first half on my morning walk with the dog, laughing and saying yes out loud every few minutes. Alisa and Melanie, so relatable. Thank you. Catherine, I'm so curious about those other Hyun Bin dramas. Hopefully I didn't mix up your names. Such a fun podcast. So we can definitely recommend more human being dramas. Right.
In fact, my lovely Sam Soon is one of our episodes. His very first groundbreaking star-making drama, and I just recommended it to somebody else today. You know, I mean, it's such a classic.
It's such a classic that's underappreciated, in my opinion. And I am a proselytizer for that show. So yeah, definitely check out Sam Soon and then listen to our episode. And finally, we have Samantha, who's actually a friend of ours outside of the podcast. And she wrote, listening to this with Kanan, who's her husband, who's watched it 4 times as we drive through South Dakota, and he absolutely loves it. Said he wants to start his 5th rewatch once the movers bring the TV. And a special thank you to Melanie for mentioning how much you cried because he thought he was the only one, or I was the only one. She was the only one. Anyway, that was pretty funny.
The story of how they've started watching it together, and he snuck and watched all of it. He just binged it without her, and she was so mad. And then he was like willing to watch it again, but then 4 times, like
he's a super fan. I'm like, wow, I'm really impressed. I'm also really impressed that it's a man. But anyway, we love getting listener feedback. It's very affirming. So thank you to everyone who took time to write to us. And now I'd like to do a quick intro to My Love from the Star. My Love from the Star aired from 2013 to 2014 and was a monster hit in South Korea and across Asia. The final episode had a 28.1% viewer rating in South Korea, and it was streamed 14.5 billion times during its first run outside of Korea. Holy crap. I double checked the number because I didn't believe it. I saw it in Wiki and went, they must have written it wrong. And I went to the source and it was correct. And I went, wow, okay. A lot of people, especially in China, really loved it. It was wildly popular in China, so much so that it started a craze for fried chicken and beer. and there were reports of people being hospitalized for eating too much of it, which is probably not true. But if you're so...
I can't confirm that is a rumor in Korea, too.
Oh, really? That's funny.
Yeah, I have heard that entirely separately from Western sources.
I tend to think it's an urban legend, but also if your show is starting urban legends, then it's successful. If people are making up stories about it, right? Right?
Right.
Catherine wanted us to mention that the book that features in the drama, The Miraculous Journey of Edward Tulane, ended up at the top of the bookseller list in South Korea when the drama aired. So this is a very influential drama. The Chinese government even convened a meeting to discuss the popularity of Korean shows and the need for China to create their own programs that could compete with Korea's. And in sort of related news, the Chinese government went on to completely ban Korean entertainment in July 2016 and only lifted the ban this past March. And the reasons for the ban are complicated, and I don't understand them all, so but it was definitely like My Love from the Star was part of the impetus that led them to ban this content.
It created an international incident. I mean, come on.
I know. It's quite remarkable. And it also puts the whole Chosun exorcist controversy into perspective as well, which very briefly, for those of you who don't know, there was a drama that was funded with Chinese money, and there were outcries about propaganda messages being put into the drama, and the drama was canceled. So that's the short version of that. Regarding My Love from the Star, Jun Ji Hyun won a Daesang, which is a grand prize at the Baeksang, please correct me somebody, awards in 2014 for her lead performance, which is the highest award for television in South Korea. And coincidentally, we didn't time this episode this way, but she is making a career comeback after taking time out to start a family. And she is going to be appearing in a spinoff of the wildly popular Netflix series Kingdom, which is a zombies in Chosun, Korea show that I'm actually in love with. So I'm excited that she is making her comeback very soon. My Love from the Star tells the story of the romance between Do Min Joon, a 400-year-old alien who landed on Earth in 1609 during the Joseon Dynasty, and Chung Sung-yi, a famous but self-centered and not too smart actress. But there is a seemingly insurmountable obstacle to their love. Min Joon has to hop on a comet in 30 days and return to his world or die on Earth. Actually, is it 30 days? It might be 90 days.
I think at the beginning, I think it was 90 days.
90 days. Sorry about that, guys. imitate Ji Hyun's famous line. So it stars her as Song Yi. Kim Soo Hyun plays Min Joon. Park Hae-jin as the second male lead, Lee Hee Kyung. And Yoo In Ah plays the second female lead, Yoo Se-mi. So one of the themes of this podcast series is what makes a classic. And so what makes My Love from the Star a classic, or is it a classic at all, as we've been defining it on the podcast? Are people still watching this, or is this sort of fading from public consciousness? And I have my opinions about this, but I want to hear from other folks first.
I think just the historical nature of how big it was makes it a classic, but I do agree with you that it's somewhat fading with newer and shinier things that are coming out more recently. And I think especially all of the new fans who are coming to K-dramas through Crash Landing on You are, you know, there's so much new content. They don't even have to get off Netflix to constantly have new content. And of course, this show is on Viki. And so, you know, it's just, but it's one, I think it, because It's Okay to Not Be Okay was just pretty recent and was so popular. This is another big one to search out by this actor. And, you know, I think it will remain a classic, but I do think it's a fading classic a little bit.
I agree with that.
Okay. I was going to say I agree with Melanie as far as it being a fading classic, only because I remember when I watched it was like last year. And I had so much expectations because I heard people raving about it. However, I had just come off from the high of watching Crash Landed on You, and I felt like in some ways My Love from the Stars was a bit of a, it wasn't a letdown, but I think when you, I went in with such high expectations that it was just not what I got. It wasn't given what it was supposed to give. And so I was a little bit like, okay, this is good for what it is, but you know, it's not like amazingly good. And I think it really was, it came at the right time period. I would say that. I think that if it came this year, would it? Well, maybe, but I feel like people don't, are into it, but if it's really, it can get messy with this type of storyline. I don't know. Like, I think it's good for what it is, but it's also a risk. And they just really got lucky and knocked the bar with this one, honestly. At least I like to think so. And so I do think that it will be a classic for some, but it's not going to be like some kind of, you know, all and all My Love from the Stars, you have to see it type of spectrum. At least to me, that's what I think.
Yeah, I think...
Go ahead, Mara.
I think for the kinds of people who are going to do deeper dives into older K-dramas, I think it's always going to be on that list. For people who are more attracted to the newer content, I think it probably won't have as much sticking power. But I think there are a lot of people who get into K-dramas from whatever the current trend is. So, for example, I got in with Goblin, was my first one. And then I went backwards because I wanted, like, basically weirder and more esoteric content. So if you're the kind of person to do that, I think My Love from the Star will always be on that list.
Yeah, and I think from my, like, my perspective is I was already watching dramas at the time this came out, and I remember what a furor it was. And for a year or two afterwards, when the question came up, which drama should I start with, people were always bombarded, as they are now with Crash Landing on You. I think we'll get into this a little more later. I think it's a really interesting drama in terms of Park Ji-jun's career, the writer. And I I go so far as to say that I'm not sure we'd have Crash Landing on You if we didn't have My Love from the Star.
That's
so
probably...
I think in that perspective, I think, you know, Melanie is right. It's fading in terms of what it was 8 years ago, but it certainly has a place, as Mara also pointed out.
I think it's worth I think also it's worth pointing out that a lot of K-dramas vanish without basically any ripple. So even if you go like 1 or 2 years back, you can find dozens of dramas that you didn't even ever hear of when they were airing. So I think relative to some other media, maybe it's not going to have as much sticking power, but relative to K-dramas, it is a really substantial splash in the pond.
Yeah, and a couple things I wanted to mention. I don't think we actually mentioned that that's the same writer for My Love from the Star, Crash Landing on You, and Legend of the Blue Sea. Yes, all three. So, which were all huge hits in their way. So she is a hit maker, a very prolific hit maker. Well, she has a very specific itch that she's scratching with her writing. And it's the same thing over and over again. It's the couple, in this one, the couple is alien and they're in Seoul. In Crash Landing on You, they're in North Korea. In Legend of the Blue Sea, there's a mermaid, but it's the same love story over and over again. So,
literally fish out of water in some ways.
Yes, yes.
But very distinct from her first three dramas in some way too, all of which, again, played with very similar kinds of ideas. So My Love from the Star is the first shift for her, and then she keeps exploring those kind of ideas. Yeah. I love her as a writer, if you haven't figured out.
Yeah, I don't, I'm sorry. so we're going to get into that later.
I think we can see those of us who've seen a lot more dramas now, and watching this drama again, I watched it the first time kind of early on in my drama watching. And you can see now how much this, and we've talked about this on our Twitter, is how it's influenced so many other dramas. The setup of the couple, and also, you know, the grumpy hero, whatever, and the obstacles to their love, but also things like the production values. This was the very first drama in 2013 to have HD cameras. I just had someone mention to me today, she's like, you know, it looks so modern, but it's from 2013. I'm like, well, that's because it was the first one. And also they kind of use that Matrix multiple camera technology to use for those times when his powers stopped time. And then he walks among like the party goers that are frozen. So, you know, it was higher production values, which we're seeing as an expectation now in all the newer dramas. Everything has to look slick and look, you know, so high quality. There's so many people, especially newer viewers, who are turned off of watching older dramas because they're like, it looks like bad American soap opera, you know, camera work. And it's like, they can't get past that because they expect that HD look that this drama ushered into South Korean dramas.
Yeah, and I noticed that, like, right away it jumped out at me when I watched it. I was like, wow, this is like the earliest drama I've seen that reminds me of Goblin. It reminds me of Chicago Typewriter. It reminds me of, like, it's got that hyper-real look. And I personally, I have ambivalent about that. Sometimes it works. Like, in It's Okay to Not Be Okay, I actually kind of loved it because it's a fable, it's a fantasy. So having everything look hyper real and kind of surreally over the top with the set design and worked really well for the storytelling. But in Goblin, I hated it because every time you had a shot of something at Goblin, there'd be 80 gazillion objects in the frame and candles and frames and arches. And then I was like, visually, I'm like, what am I looking at? I don't know what I'm supposed to be focusing on in this scene because there's so much.
That's easy.
Clutter.
It's on you. That's who you're.
Yeah, well, exactly. There is that. But, you know, so this is just a personal hobby horse of mine. I don't want to spend too much time on it, but I have ambivalence towards that look. It can work really well. It worked in Vincenzo, you know, but there are times when it's actively damaging, in my opinion, to the storytelling. So, and unfortunately, this was the first one. This is the one that really kicked all that off and created that look in dramas.
I have to say, and maybe people will shred me for this, but when I think of writer Kim Eun-suk's dramas like Goblin, I sort of think of Sanjay Leela Bhansali.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and Mara doesn't those know.
If you know, you know.
Yeah, if you know, you know.
Just to contextualize it for our non-Indian listeners, he is a filmmaker in India who's known for jaw-droppingly beautiful set pieces in his films. He composes the music for them also. So you have these spectacular dance numbers, opulent, I guess is the word. He influenced Baz Luhrmann. Mm-hmm. But his storytelling is crap. I feel really confident to say that. And if anybody wants to come after me for it, go right ahead. But I think his storytelling is crap. And I don't like his movies. Yeah, I don't like his movies. I'll watch his songs on YouTube, but I won't watch a whole film of his. And that's kind of how I feel about a lot of these K-dramas where they're so super slick, but they don't hang together as a narrative.
I will just say that I have, you know, one of my catnip things is sort of this supernatural being with the regular human. So, you know, from when I was a teenager, the movie Starman with Jeff Bridges, and of course the old Christopher Reeve Superman, you know, Lois Lane, that whole romance that was in that. So I love that kind of thing. And so when I read the synopsis of what this show is, I was like, oh my God, yes, I could inject it into my veins. Like, you know, and plus he is kind of this Spock kind of figure at the beginning of the drama. And there's nothing that I love more than a grumpy stoic hero who completely loses his shit when he falls in love. And he does in this drama in a spectacular way.
This is just a personal preference thing. Everybody's laughing because they know how I feel about this drama. I have a thing that everybody has a thing that speaks to them and that doesn't. And I do not have a thing for a perfect male hero who perfectly rescues you, and you know how you're about to trip over a crack on the sidewalk and then somebody comes swooping in with their superhero power and scoops you up.
You're gonna hate my next video.
Well, okay, but
it's called My Magic Boyfriend, and it'll be out sometime in 2023.
The thing is, Mara, we were talking about this. Like, I'm watching a drama right now, Doom at Your Service, and I'm actually loving it. And it has a supernatural theme, but the heroine, it's a different vibe because the heroine is so strong. And I really like how they cast Park Bo Young in this, and for those of you who don't know, she's
the
tiny.
Smallest person in the world.
Like literally the male lead can put his chin on top of her head. That's how short she is. And so, but she turns out to be the strongest person in the story. Like, she literally tells off God in one scene, and she is the one driving the narrative forward. It's her desires, her moral perspective that is the engine of the story. That is different, even though it has a supernatural element, that is different than what is going on with this writer, where there's this fantasy of the perfect man who comes in and fixes everything for you.
You mean he has a law degree, he has a medical degree, any emergency situation, he's got it under control.
And also he looks like that.
Yeah,
he looks, and that is something. Kim Soo Hyun is so good looking that I would literally lose track of the subtitles and have to rewind. So I appreciate that about him. He's a very handsome guy, right? But the character left me cold, and I didn't like the way he played the character either. And I didn't think he put in a good performance of the character. Yes. Go ahead, Vicky.
Yeah, piggybacking. I can't even talk anymore. But yes, I agree with you, Alyssa. I used to like the whole male perfect supernatural. But as I got older and as I've seen many dramas, I do love myself a little flawed character. I love it when things, well, it's a fantasy. I want it to be a little bit, not realistic, but like just a little bit, you know, or just give me some drive. Like you mentioned, Doom at Your Service. He's not like, he's a supernatural being, but he's not perfect. He's obviously flawed. And he clearly like yells at her a couple of times. Like, I mean, not that I'm saying you should, but I'm just saying like you see, and then you kind of seen the character growth from him. Whereas mm-hmm. when you are mm-hmm. introduced to this perfect person in the beginning, it's hard to see that growth because he's flawless in some ways, you know? And so you kind of have to dig a little deeper to maybe see him smile a little bit more. You're like, okay, he's changed. But you don't really see him. You don't really get to, you know, experience the character. And so that's kind of how I feel about the whole idea of this particular writer's stories as well.
Yeah.
And I also, when I watched My Love from the Stars, I also was not that impressed, actually. That's why I said, it's funny because rewatching it a second time kind of made me like it more than when I watched it the first time, which is weird. But I think it's because I went in with a low expectation and I went in knowing what to expect. And so I was like, oh, you know, it's fun. And plus, Jun Ji Hyun made it all worthwhile. She was like funny. She was gorgeous. She just was it in the movie, in the show. And so, yeah, I also was just a little bit put off in the beginning, but learned to kind of appreciate it for what it was later on. So
I think part of
I haven't seen her Park Ji-hoon's third drama. I've seen Queen of Housewives and I've seen Queen of Reversals. And the male leads in those dramas are complete. I have to find a polite word here. They're messes.
Oh, we're not polite on this podcast.
and it's the same actress as the lead in those two dramas, and in the Queen of they're both very what we would think is closer to soapy, so that may be kind of the reason and the audience that they were being aimed at. But the first drama, the husband he's smart, but he's like very very smart people who are also kind of dopey and dense at the same time, and he can't hold down a job, and it's his wife who has to sort of deal with the politics of behind the scene in the business to push him forward. In the second one, she's, you know, the very successful team leader in a business who he comes in as a new hire. They have a whirlwind romance, they get married, and she ends up being screwed over in the company and eventually quits and goes to be a housewife. And then she has to sort of come back and work her way up. And then the men in those two dramas are anything but perfect. So I'm kind of wondering what happened.
Well, My Love from the Stars was a hit, and I feel like she found the recipe. She knew what sells.
Well, yeah, also, was there a divorce in there? Because that's
the second drama is a divorce.
Right. But I mean, did she divorce her husband? And that's why I don't know. I'm joking. I have no idea. She was like, I'm done.
But those first two dramas were also successful. Queen of Reversals was so successful, they got two extensions.
Not as My Love from the Start.
Well, right. That's New Heights.
Exactly. Yeah.
So but for, but for a Korean audience, you know, I mean, and this is some of the stuff we talk about too, is what are the dramas aimed at? Which audiences are they talking to?
Yeah.
And very clearly those first two dramas are not aimed at anyone outside of Korea.
Yeah. That's right.
I think it's also interesting because I don't read Do Min-joon as a perfect character. I read him as deeply flawed. And I think it depends maybe what you're looking at as flaws and advantages. So, for example, the superpowers, you know, that's a plus. I love to not go off a cliff in a car. But, for example, he spent 400 years on Earth not getting close to anybody. And so his ability to shut people out for that long is really an intensely problematic aspect of his character. So I don't read him as perfect as maybe some of you guys do. I read him as
I totally agree with Mara. I totally agree with
that. I do too. He
goes through such to me, he does go through growth because, as you said, he's completely closed off from everyone. We get the flashbacks why he's afraid to open up to anyone, because if he reveals anything about himself, he's been shunned, he's been ostracized, he's been in danger. And so he so retreats into himself in his perfect little, you know, like, I love how they had those little things where he's speaking directly into the camera and he's like, you know, I didn't want to keep anything sentimental. And then you look in the background, it's all the things that he's kept from his past lives, the typewriters, the law diplomas, so whatever. And it is like this library room that is insane. And it's like, yeah, right, guy. But yeah. I feel like he goes through so much in recognizing that he has emotions and also learning why, as he puts it in the end, you know, why do humans fight so hard to live their lives, and you know, realizing that love is what it's all about. So
interesting, because I don't think he actually changes that much. I think he has a flaw at the beginning, and I think he keeps the same flaw because the person he learns to fight for isn't even like his Ajushi friend, is the woman he was trying to save like on day one.
Right. And that's where that's why perfect may not be the right word exactly, but there's this sense with all of these heroes, because Captain Ree was the same way.
And same of, like, with Legend of the Blue Sea.
Yeah, I haven't seen that one, but the first... from the very first frame, he's saving her. And from the very first frame, he's perfectly loyal to her. And from the very first frame, he's willing to die for her. And he may have flaws, but I mean, the commitment to her and keeping her alive, or because she's always about to die for whatever reason, is unrelenting. It's just, he is always, and I don't find that interesting. And it's not a fantasy that gives me, I don't get my yayas out on that.
That's why Legend of the Blue Sea is so good.
I haven't seen Legend of the Blue Sea, so I can't speak.
I recommend it.
I did. Well, I enjoyed it.
I'm not an Lee Min-ho fan, sorry. And I know you are.
I think Jun Ji-hyun was so much better in this drama than she was in Legend of the Blue Sea, though. I think this, I watched The Thieves, and that same sassy kind of banter that she had in that film, I could see why they wanted to pair her again with this actor in this drama, because they had chemistry up the wazoo in the film as well. But she is the one that I appreciated even more on the second watch, because she's comedy gold. Like, she is just, I mean, she's such a mess. Like, she's so drunk and she's talking to her hair, trying to get into the wrong apartment. It just, I mean, she could just be in a scene by herself and I'm falling off my couch laughing. She is so funny and she's so flawed. I mean, this is one thing about this writer. She's writing flawed women that we as the audience and the hero can't help but fall in love with. I mean, she's so great. And I was so pleased to hear that she did win the Best Actress Award for this, because she deserves it. It's amazing.
Yeah. I also think she really holds up the back end of the drama when things get more serious, because if you didn't like her so much, you wouldn't be as, like, genuinely, my rewatch, I was starting to flag a little bit in the second half, but the thing that kept me going was that her. Jun Ji-hyun, you love her so much and you want her to have something in her life that's stable. And so you sort of buy into the very codependent relationship, because you're like, look, I need Jun Ji-hyun to be happy at the end of this.
Yeah. She's amazing in it. Amazing. And she's the first female lead that I crushed on. Not like I want, like, crushed on. Like, I was like, I want to date her, because she was, like, so amazing in this. Like, you know, she's just so funny. Like, the scene where she is drunk and the second male lead told her a list of things not to do when you break up with your boyfriend, and she does every single one of them.
Yes.
And she's singing and crying into the phone and throwing herself on the furniture. And that scene is amazing. Absolutely amazing. And she's brilliant. And, you know,
when she has her appendix is about to burst and she's trying to put on her lipstick. Oh my God.
Because she can't be seen in public without her face. Yes.
I love her.
She's amazing. And when she tries to speak English, sorry. No, she was amazing. And she definitely is the only thing that kept me going in the drama, because there were big chunks where I was not, I didn't care at all about the murder.
No.
Yeah.
You know, didn't care that much about the second leads, really, other than the second male lead whose name I can't remember is gorgeous. That was nice. But Park other than Hayden? That, is that his name? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I appreciated him. Points. Yeah, I appreciated him more on the second watch. I felt like the emotional scenes that he had when he discovered the truth about his brother and he had to really confront his father. I thought he really did a good job. And I'm going to seek out and look for shows where he's the lead, because he's not too hard on the eyes either.
Genuinely, also, Cheese in the Trap is quite good.
If he's in that one? Okay.
Yeah, it's kind of trashy fun. So, like, get some popcorn to throw. Yeah. Yes, very, very controversial drama.
I was going to say, there was a theme I noticed with the writer as far as her second leads, whether it be female or male. They're definitely, they have their limits. They're not as annoying as, you know how you ever watch a drama, you're just, like, annoyed with the second lead, male or female? So far, out of the three dramas I've seen where the second leads, I feel like she always finds a way to let them have something going on for themselves. And even though they pine after the female lead or the male lead, they will have a moment where it's just like, okay, it's time to move on. And they actually move on. Compared to some dramas where it's like, oh my God, you're stalking her. You know what I mean? So it's like, yeah. So I appreciate that she kind of puts that kind of limit where it's all about the leads after some time, you know, like back on.
Yeah, and I also really appreciated that the second male lead, he could help her in ways that Do Min Joon couldn't. Exactly. So like, for example, when she shows up to be the supporting actress for Se Mi, he shows up with, you know, the catering truck. Yeah. And that's something that Do Min Joo wouldn't consider sort of the like social ramifications of. Yeah. And that, like, you know, really, really gave her a boost in a difficult situation.
Right.
And Alisa has to say, though, that I was super annoyed that every man in the drama served the purpose of just like saving her in some way or rescuing her from something in some way.
It was just a mess. Okay.
I know. And if it wasn't Jun Ji Hyun playing the part, I would.
Yes, who is more worthy of saving?
Yeah. I just wouldn't have been into it. Like, it was interesting because I started to compare her to Sonia Jin. And I realized that Sonia Jin really was an inferior performance in what is essentially the same part. And I like Sonia Jin a lot. But she's not Jun Ji Hyun, not in this role.
Who can be?
Who can be? Yeah, she does the sassy role perfect. I mean, she wasn't my sassy girl. This is her role. This is literally her, like, lead. Like.
Yes. Also, yeah. Anecdotally, at least twice, someone with a Korean and with a Chinese person, I have successfully communicated who Jun Ji Hyun is by going, she's really funny. Like, really funny. And they go, oh, and then we connect who she is.
Oh, isn't that, that's really interesting.
And I'm going to, and since we've mentioned my sassy girl, I'm going to put, you know, a recommendation that people go out and watch that.
Because it is so delightful.
It is. And I think it's another movie that risked not working because her character is she seems very passive aggressive and very physical and unlikable, and yet she makes that character work, and you need that for the payoff for the movie.
Yeah,
it's true.
That's literally the whole point of the movie, just her being.
Okay. Also, not to be the Legend of the Blue Sea number one stan over here, but I think when she
actually
okay, you and me, you got me. But I think that her finally playing an inhuman character gives her an opportunity to be like off the wall weird. And I really liked that because I, you know, whenever she's doing weird stuff, I'm thinking this is insane. I wonder how she can get like more over the top. And then in Legend of the Blue Sea, I felt like she finally got to do that and it fulfilled my soul. So.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
She got to cry pearls, for God's sake.
She got to cry pearls into a trash bag.
You can't beat that.
And when he buys her shoes and she tries to wear them on her chest.
I loved it. I am sorry. That was probably, yeah, I like that show.
It's in my top five favorite dramas forever. It is. She's so funny.
You're making the thing is, you're making me want to go back and rewatch because I loved her, but I didn't love the drama. So I'm now going to have to go back and give it a second chance.
I think in the same way, once you know what to expect, it's a little bit easier to forgive its shortcomings and appreciate the special charm that you might not have been primed for the first time around.
Well, heck, it even had a cameo with Cha Tae-hyun from My Sassy Girl calling her sassy. So, you know.
Yes, yes.
Now, I don't remember the actress's name, but the one that plays her best friend here in My Love from the Star that owns the manga shop, I love her. And then I love that she's like this homeless person that befriends her in Legend of the Blue Sea.
Yes.
Like just their chemistry as gal pals together is something that I really loved. Like that was the one person in this drama, My Love from the Stars, that she could completely let her hair down with and you know, eat ramyun and whatever, but just like some of the lines that the friend had, like, I need to cleanse my eyes by looking at hot men. and her reaction when he walks into her manga shop and the wind is blowing and oh my god, she is also comedy gold. I love her so
yeah,
much.
She's spectacular. And I also really appreciated, this is one of very few dramas where the female lead doesn't have somewhere to go, so she goes to her friend's house, because a lot of times they'll be like, oh no, I don't have anywhere to go, I have to sleep under a bridge, and it's like, girl, you have friends, what are you doing?
Yeah
they'll put you up for the night, it's okay. So I appreciated that there was one relationship in this drama that she could depend on someone.
Well, it is interesting though, because a lot of the relationships she has in the drama of people who need something from her. They need money, or, you know, they need her status in some way. And then that's part of it too, of somebody who in a way he needs her, but he doesn't need her. Like there's nothing she can give him materially that.
Right. And she has such a warped relationship with her family because she's been an actress, like, I guess she was a child star or a teen star. So she's been supporting her entire family, and in fact, you know, the argument that her parents have is what led her father to leave the home and whatever about her. So it, you know, she doesn't have a normal relationship with her family to use them as a support for most of the drama. I thought it was really interesting setting her up as this huge star. Alisa, you mentioned like a way to make sort of a power balance, and that she is, you know, one of the most powerful women in her way of being such a huge star at the beginning of the drama. And the whole thing about the scandal and how she had to go into hiding, I mean, it's like it was even more interesting to me now, the second watch, having been paying attention and seeing scandals affecting other people and having seen Touch Your Heart and other things that sort of other dramas that have dealt with similar plot lines. I don't know, just found it even more interesting. I didn't really get it, I guess is what I'm saying, the first time. And I get it a lot more on this second watch.
Well, and to connect it, unfortunately, to Jun Ji-hyun's real life, she's making her comeback, and a giant rumor dropped that she and her husband were getting a divorce, and that he is having an affair. She doesn't want the divorce because she's afraid she'll lose all of her endorsements and her career if they divorce.
Don't get me started on how, and again, I mean, I shouldn't judge because culturally, I don't get it. Yeah. But as a woman, it makes me very angry.
Well, it's misogynistic. I don't think we can like say it's not just, you know, it just is, right? I mean, Song Joong-ki got a divorce and his career is stronger than ever. So if Jun Ji-hyun can't get a divorce without losing everything, then obviously there's a gender bias going on, an unfair gender bias. And, you know, we don't usually talk too much about gossip unless it's directly related to the themes of what we're discussing, which has happened a couple of times now, which is weird. But anyway, in this case, it's just because life. But in this case, you know, it's very relevant. I mean, and I think that, you know, the disempowering things that happen to the female lead in the drama when she loses her career are things that women face in real life, like not the actress herself is facing, but also just everyday women where you're in a more vulnerable spot and you can lose everything. So in that sense, I get the fantasy of the protector, because then Mr. Alien comes along and gives her a purpose to her life separate from her acting, which is problematic in my opinion. Again, it's not my fantasy. It's not something that I find appealing, but I kind of think that's what's going on there. It's sort of like, you don't need a career. You've got the perfect, awesome man, you know, even though she gets her career back at the end, but it's a little icky. It's a little icky.
Especially since, you know, with all of the real world implications, especially with like the fact that in the drama there's a woman murdered by her partner while pregnant, like that level of, sorry, maybe I should have put like a trigger warning at the beginning of that sentence, but that's like an intensely violent act, and that's not really addressed at all.
That's right.
You know, she was annoying and now she's dead, and like that's the level of care given to that by the drama, and
it's almost like she deserved it. Like that's almost,
is the treatment. Yeah,
she had it coming, and it's problematic. I agree with
you. Yeah, it's like her fault for dating, you know, one of the million trashy chaebol heirs we've seen in Korean television. She picked the actual one murderous one, so she had it coming, I guess.
Yeah, I think it was the blackmailing him with the pregnancy that is what. But the whole thing was creepy. There are creepy things about this drama. That's one of them. You know what the second one is that I'm bringing up, guys?
Yep, it's happening.
Which is the child meets the hero when he's an adult.
I hate it.
I hate it so much.
Mickey's losing it over there.
Can we please stop with this shit? I mean, it's just, I'm so over it, and I'm not bleeping that out because I feel very strongly about this.
It's so dreadful, and it keeps happening. Why?
Why?
So
who is this for? Like,
well, no, there are women who like this fantasy based on all the people I see defending Goblin and defending Tale of the Nine-Tailed and defending this trope. I hate this trope. So it's pedophilic. It's not
it
cool.
Is really weird.
It's yeah. Really weird.
It
I don't
is.
Think, I don't think it's necessary in any way.
No.
They can be shown to be fated mates, fated lovers, without having met as when the female is a child. Like,
yes,
please.
I agree. And it was really disappointing that it's in this drama twice.
Yes.
Because first you have the child bride at the beginning, which is horrifying. And then you have him meet her again when she's reincarnated, or at least it's implied she's been reincarnated. And she falls in love with him at that point. She says it, that she has fell in love with him when he scooped her up.
Yeah, she imprinted on him like a duck.
Imprinted. I think of Twilight when you say imprinted.
No.
Sorry, but it's the same thing. It's the same thing.
It springs from the same deeply problematic trope.
Yup, it sure does. It sure does, and it just needs to stop.
It really does.
Yeah, I think.
Sorry,
I think it also has become like a weird crutch, even in. Especially in romances that don't have fantasy elements, there keeps being in recent years this like big revelation, like, oh, they met as children. And I'm sitting there like, it's like dropped like a huge story beat. I'm like, this doesn't actually mean anything to me. We meet people all the time. It doesn't up the stakes at all. But, you know, they'll be like, oh, I realize now that we met as a child and now I have to like run into the rain and get hypothermia.
Yeah, the childhood. The whole childhood aspects of it is really,
that's like annoying, but it's not, at least they have the same power level if they are both children when they
sometimes
sometimes well yes but like and it's okay
Did
to
any
not
of you
be okay
dodo la la so so do
no
Oh, I did. Oh my God. That was
The plot twist in that one is that he's 17. And then they keep going back in time that she met him when he was even younger and then even younger and then even younger, but she's an adult the whole time because the age gap is so extreme.
Oh my God. Okay. Yes.
Yeah. Don't watch that one.
Yeah, don't do it. Alyssa, don't do it.
Especially I know. No, I know. I don't need my head to pop off my shoulders in a rage.
And that's not the only terrible thing that drama throws at you. After, exactly.
Especially after, if you stick it out till the end.
Don't do it.
I did because don't I kept hoping, because the initial episodes were so charming before all the reveals.
Stylism, yes.
Yeah. And I thought, well, maybe they'll fix it. They won't fix it. They don't fix
it. I had
it.
Hope. I had the exact same emotional process. They're going to fix it. They get it. It's fine. No.
They made it worse.
So much worse.
The thing is, it's okay. It's just to me, it's part of with this drama, the meeting and childhood thing is part of, unfortunately, I think a bigger trope that is problematic. Like how Jun Ji Hyun is disempowered over the narrative. How she starts out as a star, and like it's almost like the implication is that she had to be broken down before she was worthy of this pure love that she was going to get from the male lead.
Isn't that always the case? Almost in Chloe.
No. Yes, in Chloe. Yes, but it's the same writer. Crash Landing on You has definitely had that trope.
Yeah.
And it's common. It's not universal. It's a common. But I find it really creepy. And I don't understand why women enjoy it. But then again, as we established in Boys Over Flowers episode, women like a lot of effed up stuff for various reasons, including me. So, but this is not my particular hobby horse. This one doesn't work for me. And it just doesn't work for me. Like, if it wasn't for Jun Ji Hyun, I wouldn't have been able to finish this drama. I would have dropped it. No doubt. Because the basic premise didn't speak to me at all.
Okay, I'm going to talk about a couple of scenes. Now, I overall really do like this drama, but there were a couple of scenes that I hated, and I don't complete. While I can sort of understand the way why they were written to create certain conflict or whatever, I still hate them. Number one is when he reveals to her that he's an alien. He takes her to the museum. And he loses his shit and breaks the museum case and the glass flies everywhere. Like, he does it in the most violent, angry way. Like, he's completely losing it. And he wants to drive her away at that point. I get it, but he has many other powers that he could have used to show her without breaking things. And the other is when he breaks up with her on the frozen lake. Now, it created beautiful scenes where he stops time and the snowflakes stop and he kisses her and she doesn't know, blah, blah, blah. Okay. But then he strands her there in the middle of nowhere after he broke up with her. He does call.
Yeah, he calls.
But she's still wandering on the side of the road in the snow. Like, please, my dude. What the
hell? Oh my goodness. If a man drove me out to a frozen lake to dump me, he would be going through that frozen lake.
I mean, well, the other thing is, like, he does that and then calls another man to pick her up without telling her. And these two dudes are like, we're going to come. It's oh my God. As I'm talking about it, I just got really angry.
That scene makes me red hot
with her brother.
It's so paternalistic.
Yeah, especially with her brother as well. He has no respect for her, and he never does. Just Domin Jun tells him, be nice to your sister, and I'll give you toys. And that's when his behavior changes, not because he respects his sister at all.
Right.
And let's not lose out on that little bit that was in the middle of what Melanie was talking about. He stops time, and he kisses her without her knowing.
Yeah, like, who is bad. That for? Is that fun for anybody?
No. Like, it's so, like, first of all, disrespectful of her boundaries. She didn't have any consent to do that. And then also, like, what an emotional cop-out, you know, on his part.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I want to do this, but not actually take a risk, not take an emotional risk. It's just garbage. And I didn't feel like it got called out. It was played as romantic. It wasn't romantic. It was messed up. And
well, I mean, I don't know, just the point that he kissed her, then he lost his power, because if he'd had his power, he could have teleported her home. Like, like, don't leave her on the side of the road.
Oh my God, man.
I also hate that he keeps kissing her in like really inopportune times. Like, you're going to be out of commission for a day now because you did that. And like, there's murderers here, man. Can we do?
But then Heaven, I love her reaction though. She's carrying him.
Yeah.
And she's like, seriously? Again?
That's hilarious. But okay, so here's another thing I wanted to compare it to Crash Landing on You, though. Because weirdly enough, even though you have this plot-related reason why these two can't get busy with each other, there's more sex in this story than there was in Crash Landing on You. When I say sex, I don't mean like actual bumping uglies. I just mean like people who, sorry, Vicky. I just mean that there's a sexual tension, sexual energy, there's desire being expressed between the main couple, regardless of whether or not they can actually do anything about it. Right. But the desire is there.
And they talk about it. And they talk about it. She says, okay, so we can't kiss, so what else can we do?
Right? I love that.
I love her, the way she said it, because she's brilliant. It was amazing. But in Crash Landing on You, which is like a later iteration, right? It's like two iterations down from this basic premise that this writer obviously has a thing for. The sex is completely out of the story, completely out of the picture. Vicky is giving thumbs down.
At least this one, they share a bed and snuggle. My God.
Man, at least we got a shower scene or something, you know, we saw him.
Right.
The shower is in a towel.
Oh, the shower scene with the towel.
I love, he's wearing a towel in the shower under a voiceover of him talking about he's mastered human showers. Like, I don't think you have, buddy.
When I first saw that, I was like, are you kidding me?
I was in stitches. But, it's so funny. Oh my God. So
I was telling you about the Filipino version where he's definitely not wearing a towel in the shower.
That's very good. Oh my God.
There's a Filipino version?
But it's
called, like, Wait For It, My Love From the Star.
What?
Wait.
So there was a Filipino remake? Is that what? I don't know anything about this.
It's on Vicky. I couldn't make it through the first episode.
But you got to see the shower scene, yes.
Well, that comes right at the beginning.
Yeah, that's like the first frame.
But
they got to sell it to you somehow.
I wanted to make sure to read this comment on Reddit that I saw on Reddit because I thought it was hilarious and accurate. And it says, I have a half-baked theory that Park Ji-un is an introvert for whom an ideal romance is with a perfectly loving and awesome, faithful man she only sees from time to time, rarely enough to miss him a bit, but not so often that she becomes tired of his shit. And I think that's an accurate assessment. Basically, not for me.
No, it's true.
Not for me, but okay, you do you. As apparently it's for true. A lot of women. It is. It's not my jam, but think about like all the women out there, that there must be like the sense of like, it's almost a fantasy for a woman who doesn't actually like men, but is still straight and wants to sleep with them. Do you know what I mean? like she doesn't actually enjoy the company of men all that much, but still desires a partner in some way. This is something
I definitely get the appeal of having a beautiful man next door so you can hang out whenever it's convenient and then I can leave and go home.
Yeah. That sounds great.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, because the ending, and to skip ahead to the ending, but it's a similar ending. It's almost identical ending to Crash Landing on You in some respects.
I think this one is better. But
I don't, but I'd like to hear why you think it's better.
Well, they get to be together longer than a couple of weeks once a year. That's and it fits with the theme of the show in that you should treat the time together as something precious because it could be taken away at any moment. And so that's literally what happens, is that they show them really enjoying and treasuring each other and being together, and then all of a sudden he vanishes in his wormhole for a little while and then he makes his way back. But
see, the realistic in me is like, but he can't even is her.
Okay, maybe this is not PG, but I'm like, have they thought about dental dams? Like,
condoms work. Contain. Anyway, I won't say it. I personally hated the ending because it would give me PTSD. It would literally give me PTSD if I was with a man I loved and we're in bed together and then suddenly he goes poof and I don't know if I'm ever going to see him again, because you don't know if he's going to be able to get back through the wormhole again and you don't know when he's going to show up, right? So then you get used to having him there and then kabam, he's gone. Oh my God, you mourn for 2 years. He was gone for 2 years and then he comes back. And then you've already moved on, right? Like, you have a life, like, you've been living your life, and oh wait, he's here again. I don't even know how to deal with it. The whole thing just, I couldn't, I was like, no. At least with Crash Landing on You, you know that you have those 2 weeks, you're planning for it. It's part of your life. Mm-hmm. Not a regular, like, you know that you're going to see this person again.
Mm-hmm.
Consistently. Yeah. I thought, and not that that's amazing either, because you're still separated all the time.
But I think out of her
that was better. Sorry, go ahead.
Go ahead, Vicky.
I was going to say out of her three stories that I've seen so far, Legend of the Blue Sea was probably the only one with the satisfying end, honestly.
I mean,
I'm with you on this.
Yeah.
It's you and me, Vicky. You and me, repping Legend of the Blue Sea. I think also there are some weird undertones in all of Jin Ji-hyun's relationships in My Love from the Star, because there's always that kind of disconnect. So, like, she has a friend that's been her friend for 15 years, but they're not friends and they secretly resent, well, one of them secretly resents the other. Mm-hmm. And then there's her, you know, hanger-on boyfriend who's perfectly nice and keeping his life on hold for her forever. And her mother who's leeching off her and her father who keeps disappearing. Like, all of her relationships are kind of awful. Mm-hmm. And the drama, I think, tries to tie everything up without actually having fixed anything.
Yeah, and so she's still a broken mess at the end, honestly.
Yeah, and so for me, her putting her life on hold forever for something that may or may not happen is not a functional ending for me.
It's not at all. There's nothing she can get from that relationship.
Yeah, especially because Do Min Joon does all of the, like, don't kiss other men, don't do back hug scenes, like the jealousy thing that's supposed to be cute that I just hate. Because he's doing that, it's like, well, is she just supposed to follow all of those rules forever when you may never come back? Like, yeah, it's not satisfying for me.
Yeah, again, it comes across as almost like she's being punished. You know?
Yeah, right.
Cut down to size, because she starts out like, you can consider it delusionally self-confident, but she's like, I'm the best. I'm the most beautiful. I'm the best, biggest star. I'm, you know, like, she's got this amazing, like, yeah. And then by the end of it, all she's living for is for the moments when he shows up. And otherwise, she's not doing anything. That's horrible. Yeah.
She's left with this emptiness that she already had. Yeah. You know, throughout the story. And it's like, that's what she gets. Like, this guy who shows up every now and then.
Like, she should have ended up with the second male lead for that. First of all,
that's what I'm saying.
He's gorgeous. Not that I didn't have second lead syndrome exactly in this.
Yeah, I didn't either.
But practically speaking, the second lead was such a better bet in every way.
Honestly.
If you're going to have a weird detached relationship, you might as well have it with someone with lots of money who's always there and
who's
loves
always
you.
There.
Yeah.
I did kind of like, though, there was a lot of things that I liked about the proposal scene on the Ferris wheel. I mean, the proposal itself was one of the most lame in all history, but the fact that Do Min Joon stops time because he doesn't want to hear it. I loved how he used his powers, and it's like it's showing in an emotional situation, but also the fact that she has that choice given to her on a platter that could have literally solved all of her problems. And as he does later in the drama, he creates a production company to create dramas for her so she doesn't have an issue of having, you know, new things to act in. But she turns that down and doesn't go the easy route, I guess is what I'm saying. And I like that. I just like that. Yeah. She went her own way.
I will say, even though I just said she should have just gone and married Ikki Hyung or whatever his name is in the show, if she'd done that, I would also complain about that. So I think the solution here is that she needs better relationships in her life so that she has better choices.
Yeah, let's,
I agree with Mara.
Let's talk about a national treasure, and that is Kim Jong-un, who plays the father figure lawyer for, he is just for our alien, and who just is constantly amused when our hero is buying false eyelashes and things like that for his new roommate. Like, I just love just the grocery shopping scenes. There's so many little scenes where he just is delighted in watching his friend of decades, who's now kind of a father figure, just completely lose it and not admit that he's falling in love. I love their relationship. It was one of the best things about this show.
I agree. It was very cute, especially when they kind of played with, you know, the fact that Kim Soo-hyun was actually the older one. And
when he gets Steve's Bon Mal and he's so happy.
Yes, yes, yes. And when they're playing Mahjong, not Ghost Hub, yeah, but they're playing, you know, and he's winning because he meets the old guy who's lying because he remembers that the guy was lying. Those scenes were cute. I actually like that a lot. I also like the whole found family aspect of it for Jun Ji Hyun, because she was somebody who didn't have a father figure and didn't have family members in her life who weren't leeching off of her. So the scenes where she's eating with the two men were actually nice. And I did enjoy that dynamic that they had going there. There was also some really funny scenes when he shows up and he's angry because they've kissed and it made the alien sick, and so he locks her out of the apartment and she's stalking in the hallway trying to get into the apartment.
Or how about when he gets so into being the father role that he has an argument with her mother of
yes. Yeah, who raised their children better.
Yes.
Comedy gold.
That was well done. You know, and the thing, going back to her being in the hallway trying to get into the apartment, and another actress, it would have been really annoying and I would have been angry about it, how needy she was, but she played it so funny, but also with a real concern, like she was legitimately really worried about him and was really wanted to make sure he was okay. And it's just her, like she just by pure charisma made that tolerable, because with somebody else, I would have been utterly annoyed by that behavior.
Honestly, one thing that I could take away from this drama is how much I craved Clementines every time I saw her eating those. Every time she ate so much, I was just like, oh my god, like I low-key went and bought some while watching.
That's hilarious. You didn't buy penis fish? What? Remember she was eating penis fish?
Oh no.
She had a craving for that. Yeah, the worms.
No,
sea cucumbers. Sea cucumbers.
Sea cucumbers.
No.
The translation from Vicky was like penis fish or something.
It's a sea cucumber.
That's hilarious.
It was definitely craving a chicken. I'm not a beer drinker, but we definitely ordered some Korean chicken while I was rewatching this, and I was soju instead.
But it goes so well with beer.
Oh my god, it does.
Now I know why they love it.
Yep. I live near Kayo-chan, which is a Korean chain, and it's really good. If you want fast food chicken. Anyway.
One of the other second leads is Yoo-na, who is a podcast favorite, I guess I would say. I mean, I know Alisa really liked her. Touch Your Heart was such a great drama. But I don't know. She wasn't doing it for me in this drama. I don't know if everybody else felt the same. I just felt like, wow, she progressed by the time Goblin and Touch Your Heart came along, because I just didn't feel like she was so great in this one.
Like, at one point, I'm not going to lie, I forgot that she was low-key in My Love from the Stars, because I watched that one first and then I saw her in the other ones and I was like, wait a minute. So when I went back, I was like, oh, that was her. But I like her though. No, this is no shade at all, because that's like one of my girlies. But I just really, she didn't leave such an impressionable, you know, role for me in My Love from the Stars. Yeah, yeah.
I think part of it is that her plotline kind of peters out. I felt like at the beginning, I was like, oh, this is going to be like an amazing plot point of, you know, this character who it has been friends with someone for a long time and feels overshadowed and has been, you know, kept in the shadows sometimes on purpose through neglect, we'll say that. And so I was kind of waiting for the emotional payoff of such a strong premise. And then it just kind of never happened.
Yeah. And also I felt a little bit creepy because she was interfering with the murder investigation in really unethical ways. And I thought it sort of seemed like she was heading for a villain track, but then that didn't really go
she's
anywhere.
She's annoying me. Like,
yeah. And then ultimately I was like, is she there just to be a woman who's jealous of the female lead, because the female lead is so amazing?
Pretty much.
Then you get affirmed in your amazingness by the jealousy of other women, which is also hugely problematic, right? Like, she doesn't have close friendships, like real meaningful friendships with other women.
Except the ones who pose no threat to her in her career.
Correct.
Like the bookstore lady.
Right. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Right. Yeah, that's a problem. That's a problem.
If she had gone full villain, I would have loved it. If she had like somehow swooped in and saved the day in the end, that would have been cool. But it was just sort of, she went back to the same role she had always been, of people are asking her about her friend instead of about her. And she doesn't get to have a career.
Yeah. And yeah,
they were kind of setting it up to be like an All About Eve kind of a thing, where the the person from the shadows comes in to take the lead. And then, like you say, they didn't really... they could have followed through, like you say. They were kind of setting it up that she could have been a villain, and I would have been all for that too. But it just kind of petered out.
And they also kind of missed a beat where Jun Ji Hyun should have taken more time to reflect on how she'd treated Saemi, of keeping her in the shadows, and how hard it would have been to be, you know, second fiddle all those years. And instead, Hee Kyung comes in with the catering truck and saves the whole situation, and she doesn't have to think about how she's treated people at all.
Exactly.
Yeah. But that's a fantasy, right, of the awful female lead. Like, to me, a classic example is Twilight, which I keep mentioning a lot on this show. But anyway, Bella is horrible. Bella's horrible. And yet she gets all the goodies and she never stops being horrible. And I think it's common fantasy in some romances. Like, also, I think Bridget Jones' Diary is actually kind of an example of that. I think Bridget Jones is awful. This is my personal bias. I really hate that character with a passion. Yes. And I think she's awful and self-absorbed and selfish, but she still gets everybody she wants. She doesn't have to be competent. She doesn't have to be responsible. She doesn't have to like do anything other than be completely self-absorbed, and she gets everything she wants.
I think that's a little bit of a safer avenue in comedy, because then you're also getting something along the way. In a drama, it just kind of falls really flat for me, because it's like, well, you're awful and I'm not having fun.
I agree with you. And I mean, the nice thing about this is that with Jun Ji Hyun playing the part, you are having fun.
Right.
And you want good things for her just because of her, because of pure charisma. Right. It's not about what's written. I think a lot of this, actually, we had this conversation with Crash Landing on You as well, that these characters need very strong actors to portray them, because as written, they're a little flat. And then you need a very charismatic person filling the role to give it depth and interest. Yeah.
I think that's a little bit of a problem, because if you're seeing an actor you already like, I think you're willing to give them a little bit more leeway, but I don't think they're roles that are very good at winning you over.
Yeah. Mm.
I agree. So, and this one, I went in not knowing either actor. So I was coming in cold for the two leads, and Jun Ji Hyun I fell in love with, and then Kim Soo Hyun I was very... I found him very mediocre in this and very flat. However, I've seen him in other things. So I know he can act. I mean, he's really funny in The Thieves with Jun Ji Hyun, and he's good in It's Okay to Not Be Okay.
Yeah, so. I think he at the beginning of his career was a much better funny man than a straight man. And then I think in It's Okay to Not Be Okay, because the female lead was so off the wall, he was the straight man again. But I think, I don't know if they gave him more to work with. I think they did. And I think he's also just figured out how to do it at this point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I think the balance worked a lot better in that one.
Yeah, because I think my comment was, because Secretly Greatly, the movie came out around the same time, which is a very comedic role. And I commented that he is good, but not here.
Or maybe could it be that he was trying to portray what an alien should kind of be? Like he was just too into that idea of that character that it just came off not so great. I think that he was trying to go for the whole robotic, alien-ish, closed off, you know, cold, you know, stoic male lead. But it just was just, you know, it wasn't really him. I don't know. Maybe it just came off wrong.
Go ahead, Mara. Yeah.
For me personally, there were some moments where it worked. Like, I like when he's like, stay 1 meter away. And then she like, oh, sorry. And backs off. Yeah. And then he's like, that's more than a meter. You can come back a little. Yeah. Like those kinds of moments, that really worked for me. So then it feels like it's not a total misfit. It's just some parts don't work. I think it leans a little bit on the writing because sometimes he does make it work.
Yeah. I think it's the writing. I also think it's really hard to play that kind of role. And the drama I kept thinking of was My Ajashi, because you have Lee Sung-kyun and IU portraying characters who are extremely emotionally shut down because of trauma and depression, and they still have to make those characters compelling because they're the leads of the drama. It's also a much better written drama, so there's that, and a very different genre. And they're not aliens. However,
not canonically.
No, but like IU and they just, and it was interesting. I read an interview with Lee Sung-kyun, and he said when he first took the role on, the director kept telling him, do less, do less. And it was driving him crazy because he was like, you're tying my hands behind my back. I don't know what I'm supposed to be doing to portray this character. And the director was right, of course, because of how it turned out. But yeah, I mean, it's legitimately hard to take a character like this and make them interesting. And unfortunately, I don't think Kim Soo-hyun really pulled it off in this case.
It's not easy.
No.
I think also when you have two male leads, they're almost always diametrically opposed, and you almost always have like the stoic one and then the fun one. And no matter how likable the stoic one is, the fun one has a very serious advantage. So you can look at any number of dramas for this, like Airs. Like Lee Min-ho is the stoic one and Kim Woo-bin is the fun one. So even if you love Lee Min-ho, Kim Woo-bin's bringing more to the table.
Yeah, he does.
And, you know, True Beauty came out not long ago. Like, one of them is stoic and one of them is fun. And so you run into this problem over and over again of the person playing the good, boring character is starting from a lower rung.
Yeah, that's true.
And it takes a lot to pull it off.
Yeah, again, that's why I was saying Hyun Bin when we did the Crash on the NU episode. I was like, he was Hyun Bin. He's a major mega star who's hugely charismatic, who, you know, took a paper-thin character and gave that, made it a person.
Those dimples are carrying a lot of weight.
Oh my God, yes. Yes, 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 yes. Anyway, another problem I had with the show, I'm just laughing because like we're dragging this show to hell to some extent. But anyway, the metaphysics of the show.
Oh my gosh. Go ahead.
When we hit the episodes right near the end where they start talking about the comet coming back, suddenly I hear laughter from my husband, who's an aerospace engineer.
Never a good sign.
He's like, all of that, that's nonsense. I'm like, yep.
That's hilarious. That's so funny. That's like, yeah, yeah. And the thing is, like, even so, my thing is, when you're world building, even if your base premises are absurd, they should be consistent. Like, whatever parameters you establish in your universe. And this, they didn't really do that. We don't know, for one thing, we don't know enough. We don't know anything about his home planet. Did he have a family? Did he have anybody he was close to? Did he have friends?
At the end, he had that throwaway line about how, like, we don't have families on my planet. I'm like, well, honey, you came from somewhere. Yes. Did you grow in a test tube? How does this work?
And maybe it's like Spock, as Melanie brought up, but then you need to establish that as part of your world building. Like, we actually know a lot about Vulcan and Spock and his family and how he grew up, and that informs the character. But with Domin Ju, you don't know anything.
You don't. You're just supposed to believe he's an alien and he's just there, honestly, and you're just there. Like, that's just kind of how it rolls in some ways.
And it lowers the stakes because you don't know what he's giving up to stay with her.
Exactly.
Right.
So, and, you know, the whole thing about he couldn't go back for 400 years, but suddenly there's a wormhole. What?
You know, they had 400 years on their planet to advance technology. I don't know.
And then he gets yanked out of Earth suddenly for no reason, but it's never explained why. Like, why is that happening? And why didn't it happen until he went back? Like, it wasn't like it was happening when he was still on Earth that he was getting yanked back randomly.
He came on a spaceship the other time. Come on.
Yeah. That's obviously.
It's also strange that he gets popped through a wormhole three times and winds up in the same room as people he knows and nowhere else on Earth. Like, make it make sense, guys.
Yep. Which you could totally make it make sense. Like, I can think of something right
just
off
like
the top of my
head. Intersplice it with like two more scenes where, like, oh, I'm in the ocean. Oh God. And then he gets sucked back. Like,
oh, I don't even mean that. Or you could do the wormhole always opens up to next to someone I love, or I always opens up next to somebody I'm connected to. You see, somebody hired me to be a screenwriter.
If I saw that in a show, I would be like, oh,
that's so cheesy. I feel like you would hate it, Alyssa, if you heard that.
If I watch it instead of writing it.
Like, wormholes are always influenced by the power of love.
Yes. Yes. But the thing is, you can establish whatever you want in the universe, right? As long as you establish it. You just establish it and set the rules and always follow them. Like, whatever the rules are, follow them and then you're done.
Yeah, I feel at some point the rules were not being followed. Kind of doing his own thing.
And she did the same thing in Crash Landing on You, because either the border with North Korea is like impenetrable, or it's Swiss cheese and everybody can tramp through it whenever they want to. Like, which is it, folks? You know, it's so, you know, you can't go through it until you can. And then suddenly everybody's on the other side gallivanting around South Korea. Right?
Especially in My Love from the Star, because they use those like vignettes where they're like talking to the camera, those are present from pretty early on. I think probably like episode 8 to 10 is when they first started popping up. So then the ending was that he was always gonna end up on Earth, because you know, he's talking to a camera about his final experiences on Earth. So it had to be planned from at least partway through, and this drama wasn't pre-produced. So like, that was the plan, and we couldn't lock it down a little bit stronger.
You just brought up a really good point, actually. No, because why? Why was that thing? Like, why was he speaking for, like, why? Just for us to hear, see the ending that he comes whenever, like,
it was pretty epic when he showed up at the award ceremony. I did love that scene though.
Yes.
Oh gosh.
We got a good kiss out of it. I'll give it that.
I guess.
But Vicky, I'm with you. It just doesn't make it make sense. Like, literally, make it make sense.
Make it make sense. Yeah.
If you have a fantasy element, you have to have some rules. And I think with fantasy, especially with when you have like immortal life in the mix, or like past lives and previous lives, or any kind of fantastical supernatural element, it is I think, a good gateway to have those like really strong bittersweet endings. Like, for example, like Hotel de Luna runs on very similar tracks to My Love from the Star. And the ending was incredibly strong. And not to spoil it. It's amazing.
And it's still good. You know what I mean? But we don't do that.
Yeah. Right. They put in the work to lock down the rules of the world, and then they worked with it. Whereas in My Love from the Star, they're just kind of skating by, it feels like. And there are other
like a fairy tale book.
Yeah, there are other romances with a half supernatural, half, you know, mundane couple before My Love from the Star that, you know, worked it out. So for example, My Girlfriend is a Gumiho predates My Love from the Star. And, you know, they made the rules, they told a story within the rules, and then they rolled from there. So it's not impossible. And there were predecessors, just My Love from the Star didn't think that was important, maybe.
I just find that this writer, her focus and interest or obsession, I would dare say, is so specific and narrow that every other aspect of the plot kind of like gets sacrificed or fades away.
Yeah, it's about the vibes. It's atmospheric more than
true.
It's about the intensity of this love, and that's unfortunate. And it can, and even in Crash Landing on You, the secondary characters were way better developed. You had this huge cast, and the second leads were fantastic, and I absolutely loved them, and they got a raw deal. But the people who are obsessed over Crash Landing on You are super fans of Crash Landing on You. The super fans are obsessed with Captain Ree and Seti and their romance. That's what the draw is. That's the all enveloping. It's almost, to me, almost suffocating, but that's just my reaction because it's not my fantasy. So I just find it like too much. And Vicky, you said that when we were talking about Crash Landing on You. You were like, it's too much. It's too
and
much.
I still stand by it.
Yes, I'm with you. I'm with you. I agree.
I think this is a good place for us because we did have some idea to talk about the different writers, about Park Ji-yoon versus Kim Eun-suk versus the Hong sisters.
Hong sisters.
I love the Hong sisters.
They're amazing.
And I think you've mentioned the fact that when they world build, they world build. Yes. I don't always love everything in the dramas, but they're very consistent. Now, I've already said earlier in this episode that I do really like Park Ji-yoon's writing. I like her work as a writer, but I concede that she writes dramas that can be kind of messy, that can leave ends. And like, some people get sucked in by the production values and I get sucked in by the thinky stuff. So if she's going to use an idea from a classic children's book in as the core of her book, and she's going to plunk it and plunk it and plunk it, and then give us a line, you know, from the end, near the end, that echoes the theme of the book, then I'm going to be a sucker for that. She also carries a lot of the same actors through drama to drama to drama. I'm a sucker for that. She'll also write cameos for people. We saw that in Crash Landing on You. I think that's probably the place she does it the most, but it's in every drama she writes. But I think she has strengths as a writer that really speak to me as a viewer.
And I think there's...
Go on with the Hong sisters because like...
Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, just there's a lot of subjectivity in this kind of thing. So some people I think really like more atmospheric things. So there are a number of dramas that people are always raving about that like do nothing for me and vice versa. So there is a huge aspect to what kinds of vibes do you like, honestly. So like the Hong sisters, you know, they have a very kind of intense, like fast paced, like, you know, here's a whole bunch of characters and here's a whole bunch of rules of the world and go. And for some people that's really overwhelming, or they just, you know, they just want to chill and not memorize, you know, what ghost goes where. So, you know, it depends so much on the person. Yeah.
And they have a lot of pop culture references too, that they throw in. And I agree with you. I think people either adore what the Hong sisters build or it leaves them cold. I'm in the adore category.
How does the writer, I'm also in the adore category. And I can't remember her name. Oh, Kim Eun-suk.
Yes.
How does she compare?
To the Hong sisters? That's and a little unfair. For me, Park Eun-suk is really good at putting together an intensely atmospheric experience. So you guys talked about how you didn't like the sort of production of Goblin. That was the first drama I ever saw. So that was actually what pulled me in, was I was like, this is visually stunning.
I'm with you on that one. I'm with you on that one.
No, Goblin was the first one I saw. She also did The King, you're right.
Also, I'm the only person who has that opinion about Goblin. Everybody else loves Goblin. I'm the outlier.
I'm not touching Goblin.
The story, just the production. Just the production value.
Yeah, I don't like the production value.
Gorgeous.
Yeah. I think it's beautiful and stunning, like even just the houses and like just the framing and the colors, like especially because I was coming from almost exclusively Northern American television at that time, was very like grim dark and like all of the colors are washed out. So I was really happy. I was like, oh my God, I can see your face. It's lit. There are colors here. People are wearing clothes that like are interesting and not just black. Like, I'm so here for this.
So we've spent a fair amount of time dragging My Love from the Stars. However, with love. Well, not for me. If anybody wants to come after me, feel free. I don't want to speak for my podcast partners, but all kidding aside, but you know, this was a monster hit. Monster, like ate the internet hit. So why is it that this was so popular? And you guys will have to answer this question because I can't. But why do you think it was such a massive hit?
I mean, I do think the chemistry between the two leads is, I mean, it's just something that was special in The Thieves. And I loved seeing it. You know, that's one of the things that carried me through. I just loved her performance. And he's very, very pretty to look at.
Exactly. Like, you had all the recipes of... You know, I mean, you have them too. She's beautiful. He's gorgeous. He's an alien. He has a great body. He's there. I mean, it was just a hit. It was a hit, honestly.
And if you look at the elements of it, I mean, that's one of the things about K-dramas. It's a little bit of everything, right? So we have a serial murderer plot, which may not be the main focus, but still it adds a little action. It's not romance is a bonus book. You know what I mean? This is not just a simple romance. There's other elements of danger and so forth. And so you have a little bit of that. You have a lot of humor. You have, you know, to me, I love the romance part. I love that whole, you know, grumpy alien, the whole thing. Like, I love that. And I really did enjoy it on the second watch. I will admit some of the episodes dragged. I mean, we've talked about that. This was so successful. I think it was supposed to be 20 episodes and they dragged it out to 21. You know, I mean, I think it did have a strong finish, but it's, you know, definitely, you know, there were some slow parts. Let's just put it that way. You know, but overall, I thought it was good storytelling. Now, is it the greatest of all time? No, but I think it's solid. I think it's a solid drama for me.
Yeah, it was good for what it is. This is how I like to sum it up. It was good for what it was. And would I like to see another story like that? Maybe it depends who the lead guy is, but...
If it was Lee Min Ho, she'd be all over it.
Oh, yeah. I mean, come on. Excuse me. But no. But, you know, I think it was okay. I'm not that crazy about it. So that's why I didn't say much during this whole, but it was okay. For me. I'll leave it at that.
Well, it was interesting because I think this was me that suggested it because it was a little bit different storyline than any of the other ones that we were suggesting. And we did do a poll among our followers, and this was definitely the winner among the people that we asked. So it still does have a poll and a somewhat of a fandom, even if it's not the newest, trendiest show out there.
Yeah,
it doesn't have the same energy, though, as like Coffee Prince, like you literally, or Boys Over Flowers. Oh, yeah. If you're a new drama watcher, what? You will be recommended Coffee Prince and Boys Over Flowers. And Boys Over Flowers.
Oh, do people actually recommend Boys Over Flowers?
They do.
Betcha. Oh, okay. Honey. Oh, Mara doesn't know about this. Okay, so
I've been told not to watch it, I think, more times than I've ever been told to do anything in my entire life.
No.
They will probably DM you secretly, be like, watch. They will just say it on the public platform, but they will let you know.
We just crossed 3,500 listens on the podcast, and 1,700 of them are for Boys Over Flowers episode.
People watch it.
Yes, people watch it.
The ones that tell you not to watch it.
But do they watch it because they like it, or do they watch it because it is what it is?
They like it. They like it, Mara. I hate to break it to you, but people really love that drama.
That's a whole can of worms.
You want to see
my love from the start. Oh, go ahead, Catherine.
If you want to see me traumatized, just put people who will recommend and love Boys Over Flowers.
Oh, man. Well,
I mean, the funny thing is, Alisa, like, we did this whole episode where she trashes it, and yet she has to watch every version that exists.
Yep.
I'm on the same train tracks, but that's because I'm garbage. I can't speak.
I am garbage.
Oh, me too.
I'm garbage for that show. I'm not going
to
lie to you.
Yeah,
but
me
back
too.
To my love from the start. I think some of the things that we were talking about as things that didn't work for us are actually some of the things that kind of do contribute to its star power. Like, because there isn't a whole lot going on, there's a lot of empty space. That means it's really easy to catch up on. I mean, I rewatched the whole thing on, maybe this is a terrible thing to admit, I rewatched the whole thing on 4x speed. Normally you can't go much past like 2 or 2.5 before you start, like, you know, the subs start stacking on top of each other and you just can't follow. It's kind of an empty drama. Like, there's not that much conversation and they speak slowly. And so if you're catching up, that you don't actually have to do that much. If you want to catch up on a Hong Sisters drama, you got to watch the whole thing. You got to be present. You got to be focused. You can very much put My Love from the Star on in the background, especially if you're Korean and speak Korean and don't have to be looking at the subs. You just have to be listening for like a minute and a half every now and again.
But that might explain too a big reason why it was popular overseas, because maybe it was just easier to follow. You know,
and easy to sub. You can get those subs up real fast.
Yeah.
Not a whole lot of specialized vocab.
Yeah.
And honestly, if I, you know, if I watch a lot of shows just live when they air, and sometimes when, you know, there's a lot happening, I'm like, okay, I don't know what just happened. Yeah. And I will have to rewatch that with subs on. But sometimes, you know, if it's just a romance, especially like this, I think I could watch My Love from the Start without any subtitles and with no knowledge of Korean and still pretty much track well. So I think it would have been easy to sub and easy to package and easy to consume. And because it's longer, you do get that momentum of more and more people jumping on and more and more people going, you got to watch it. And so I think it's a really good show to watch, not necessarily to rewatch. I know some of us said we liked it better on the rewatch, but I enjoyed it more the first time. I was like sucked in. And the second time I was very much going, oh, didn't think about that the first time.
Well, to be honest, I probably liked it more at rewatch because I had control over skipping some scenes that I didn't care
That's
for.
True.
Rather than the first time I was watching it all. I mean, I was like, ooh, into it.
Oh, worst I watched it very early on, so I had more patience then.
Yeah, me
too. I
don't
have any
that
now.
That was back when I was binging dramas perfectly, no skips, nothing. Like, going right into it. Yeah.
And so, this comes from earlier in my drama watching career. As I said, I watched it as it aired, and I actually liked it more this time around. I think with the distance and the number of dramas I've watched in the meantime, I got more of the references and the little things that I like now about her writing. I think the first, at least the first couple of episodes, three episodes, were really slow in the setup. And I was like, I have no clue how to fast forward beyond, you know, letting it go. But there were moments that I really would have liked to skip a little more.
You've got to utilize that button.
Especially for the era, there wouldn't have been as many like video on demand options, so a lot of people might have jumped in on like episode 5 or so. And honestly, like, there's because of the lack of world building, there's nothing to get. Like, she's weird, he's stiff, let's ride. And, you know, there's a pretty low bar for entry. So I think, honestly, that really would have helped people jump on.
Now, Alisa, you say you've been trashing this, but you did admit that you got invested in the couple.
I was super sucked in.
Yeah, I actually love the couple eventually. It took me a while.
Yeah.
And they do have chemistry, and they're both gorgeous to look at. Yeah. And the scene when they go off to their little cottage to be together, right, when they think they're about to be separated, and yeah. she's like, we're going to have 6 kids. And that was legitimately poignant. I actually cried in that part. So I have to admit that made me cry.
Well, I think this was a fantastic discussion. I'm so glad, Mara, that you joined us for this.
Thank you again for having me.
So, in bottom line, I think this is a fading classic, but I think it was worthy of discussion because it was so big at the time, and also because we can see how it has influenced so many dramas that happened after it.
I agree. I think that I wouldn't call it a classic necessarily, but I would call it a very influential drama on everything that followed. So maybe in that sense, it's a classic, but not in the sense of like rewatching necessarily or getting recommended going forward. Anyway, sorry.
we had such a nice heartwarming moment and then it kept getting colder and colder.
Yeah, well, you know. Anyway,
I would say classics are not always classics because we like them. Sometimes they're just classics because they're important.
Oh, believe we had a long discussion on that in the Boys Over Flowers episode.
I think it's worth bringing back here.
Yes, I agree. All right. That is it for this episode. Ladies, this was amazing. Mara, thank you so much for joining us. And also, listeners, please go to her YouTube channel. You will be delighted. Her videos are amazing. So please check them out. I'm going to drop the link in the show notes. Yes. And that's it for this episode. See you next time. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.